Marty Lur here with the Reverend Jesse Jackson. Baseball, the stories are what make the game.
One of the great memories really was listening on radio. I was a very small kid in 1950, and the Dodgers were playing the Phillies, great rivalry. And Eddie Wickers hit this game-winning line drive, and Jackie Robinson dove to the air and caught it, and a double play, and came in 13, didn't hit a home run. Of course, you know how radio announcers during those times could really make it come alive for you. And when they said Eddie Wickers line drive, all you could hear was the people cheering. It was over. Then amazing, amazing. Jackie caught it. You know, and it was Jackie, and it was 1950. And he actually fell out. He dove through there. Then hit the game-winning home run. Because, of course, the heartbreaker is Bobby Thompson. For all Dodgers fans, you're just trying to forget 1951. You just can't. You wipe it out your mind.
You know, I had the pleasure of spending time with Joe Black, a wonderful man, and Larry Doby as well. Give me your impressions of Jackie and Larry Doby and Joe Black and some of the pioneers who did come into baseball.
You know, for example, right now, Ernie Banks is in that class, and the Cubs have a statue of Jack Brickhouse in front of Wrigley Field, an announcer beloved. They should have a statue of Ernie Banks. When Ernie Banks came into Chicago, he met hostility, met a lot of doubt, a lot of resentment, and yet he's Mr. Cub. But in many ways, Mr. Baseball. I mean, I think that Ernie Banks should be the goodwill ambassador for all of baseball. I mean, against all these odds, I mean, and I often think of guys, the odds they master off the field. He was one of 12 children from poor side of Dallas. His mother's still alive, she's 91 years old. And Ernie Banks is a story unto itself. And through Buck O'Neill, then he managed, Ernie, he's here now. But really Joe Black and Ernie Banks and Willie Mays and Don Newcombe and Roy Campanella and Sam Jethro, that whole first generation, Juan Marichal, they had to face some real odds of resentment. I remember in 1972, the Rainbow Push, we honored Jackie Robinson for 25 years, and baseball had ignored Jackie at that time. Because we honored him, it kind of forced him to respond by honoring him as well. And Jackie, in his typical fashion, they honored him in Cincinnati, said, well, thank you for honoring me, but we don't have a third base coach 25 years later. The next year, the Reds had Perez as third base coach. So Jackie never stopped breaking down barriers and making things happen. I mean, all these guys who now play owe a special debt to Jackie, not just as a ball player, but absorbing all of the anger, the bitterness, the hostility, the hatred, the humiliation, the attempts to spike him, throwing balls at him. And I mean, to be in this lion's den, everybody with a spear except you, is really tough. Some people suggest maybe he died so young because he absorbed so much without really fighting back. And so Jackie, so I would contend that you had the white leagues before 1947 and the black leagues. You had two leagues. We say one was major and one was black, but one was white and one was black. Because during the offseason, they would do barnstorming tours and the black players would win and play very well. So you had two leagues. The major league started in 1947 when everybody could play. And what makes this game so intriguing, frankly, reason why you can pull for a player not based up in black or white or Latino or Asian is that the playing field is even and the rules are public and the goals are clear. So it's 60 feet from the pitcher's mound to home plate for all hitters and all pitchers, 90 feet to all bases. And the fences don't move according to who's at the plate. And because it's an even playing field, and the rules are public and the goals are clear, we can all go to the next level. And maybe that's the great lesson America should learn from this game, is that we all, when we end the need for affirmative action, when will that be no more racial injustice? When you even the field and make public the rules and make clear the goals, when that happens, you can all go to the next level. But now you're poor for guys based upon uniform color, not skin color. Based upon league, not based upon race. And that's because on this field, at least for 2 or 3 hours a night, you'll have an even field. and public rules and clear goals. To me, that is the American hope and promise that baseball offers us.
You know, it's wonderful to talk to you. Larry Doby, I had the pleasure of meeting him in Cooperstown, Monty Irvin as well. Your recollections of Larry Doby, because he came in July 5th of 47, 11 weeks after Jackie, and the Cleveland Indians turned their backs on him.
But let me say to you that the thing I remember about Monty Irvin, I went to North Carolina A&T. Cal Irvin was our basketball coach. And Cal and Monty were brothers, of course. And, of course, I was a Dodger fan because Jackie meant so much to all of us. And they were playing the Giants and Monty Irvin. And Monty had hit one home run, so we could relax because no one should have hit two home runs, but Monty Irvin did. But these guys all had such class, you know. I mean, they understood their role in terms of as professional people. But none of them ever disgraced the game or disgraced themselves. They always felt the restraints of being public people with a sense of private dignity. I mean, all of them brought great honor to the country and to their race, but always a sense of dignity because they knew who they were in relationship to the broader public. Larry Doby really was underestimated as a ball player. He was so overshadowed by the Jackie Robinson phenomena, which he accepted. He had no bitterness to it. It's, for example, guys like Josh Gibson, some of those guys did, but it should have been them rather than Jackie Robinson. Larry Doby didn't have that hang up. But Larry Doby was just this excellent ball player. I remember when he played for the White Sox for a while. Just the daring plays and the power to have such a small body, but a good mind. And of course, he was his manager for a while on the Vec for the White Sox. But Larry Doby is one of the great players of all time who was really under the shadows of the social impact of Jackie Robinson's breakthrough.
You know, he was only 22 when he broke in with the Indians on that doubleheader, and he got to pinch hit in the first game. Played nine innings in the second game. They didn't let him play in the field for the rest of 1947. 1948, he became the center field, and the Cleveland Indians went to the World Series.
Well, you know, now you're talking about Larry Doby. You're talking about Big Powell. You're talking about Elson Howard. A lot of the guys, you know, who could play, still couldn't play. They brought them on the field to avoid the social stigma of not having a black player on the field, but me and Elson Howard sat on the bench much too long. For example, no doubt about it, he was a superior ball player. And I think I've never seen a first baseman who was so phenomenal as Vic Power. I mean, people would just as soon see a ground ball hit the short a second and throw it out the first as to see a home run. I've never seen a first baseman with the level of sportsmanship and athleticism of Vic Power and his hitting style. He was a phenomenal ball player.
He could steal home. One other, before I let you go, Sam Jethro. Not a lot of people remember Sam Jethro. The Dodgers signed him originally, then he went to the Boston Braves, but he could fly.
Absolutely, greased lightning. I mean, he defied gravity, could run so fast, you know? But again, all those guys were the best players really in the world at that time. You think those guys coming from obscurity to being stars of a night, I mean, they were already stars. They had just not been given opportunity. That in the black leagues and really in the Latino leagues, was not a talent deficit, opportunity deficit. My father played the Greenville Black Sprinters. In the offseason, Don Newcomb and Campanella would barnstorm. Those guys made such little money. So in the offseason, they would tour just to make extra money, and to hear their stories. And yet they never displayed it publicly. They always had this awesome sense of dignity. But Sam Jethro was one of those guys. And Baker, you know, Baker the Banks. Likewise, each of those guys were kept in the oven much too long. And unfortunately about Jackie came in, he was 27, 28 years old when he came in. I mean, my God, the baseball could have seen Jackie at 20. I mean, can you imagine a guy with a four letterman, football, basketball, baseball, and track at UCLA? mean, a four Letterman.
I know. Amazing.
A four Letterman.
You know, Monty Irvin, the story was, Monty Irvin was the best player in the black leagues, but after World War II, he wasn't ready to be a major leaguer. Something happened during the war. Cal Irvin told me the story. He would have been the first to break the line, but he wasn't ready, and he only went to the Giants when the Dodgers wouldn't pay Emma Manfrey $5,000, and the Giants took both Monty and Hank Thompson at that point. But Monty Irvin is a young man. He was the best.
Hank Thompson was a lot of third baseman.
Yes, he was.
He had a vacuum cleaner.
That's right.
I mean, when you had Alvin Dock and shortstop and Hank Thompson and Willie Mays, that was a lot of ball team.
How about Satchel?
Well, you know, one word that's often overused in athletic talk of genius and phenomenal, kind of run out of words describing these unusual human beings. Besides the Pedro, was all of that and more. I mean, no one ever quite argues that they knew a better pitcher than Satchel Paige. I mean, with all the players who have the records of 300 wins and 150 wins and 3,000 strikeouts and all that, no one ever says he's a better pitcher than Satchel Paige. I mean, friends and foes alike. And he told me once his greatest pain was he didn't get a chance to face Babe Ruth in the majors. I mean, he wanted, and again, when my father's group, when the guys would tour in the South, I mean, Junior Gilliam came out of that, and he too was great. And he hit the home run against the Yankees in the World Series, Junior Gilliam. I was actually, my senior year in high school, I was scouted by Dizzy Trout and Red Ruffin to play for the White Sox or the Dodgers. But I also had a scholarship to go to college and play football. And I just felt at that time that football in college was more than my long-term interest than baseball. And I love baseball, I think, the most. But it was so difficult. I mean, the risk was so great that some of the best players couldn't play. I know if I finished college that I had more options. But my father was a professional black baseball player. And in that league, when the guys would barnstorm, he was always one of the all-star players. So I was a bat boy for Don Newcomb. Man, that was a big deal.
It's true.
Man, to be a bat boy for Don Newcomb.
You're right.
Could he throw that ball?
Let me tell you, people don't know about Don Newcomb. Don Newcomb was one mean pitcher, and he would hit you in the neck before he would throw it over the plate.
Well, Don, 27 remains in one season.
27-7.
But Don has made an amazing gentleman in life. You know, beyond the ball field, he is still just a great gentleman. You know, and again, another one of those guys, somewhat overshadowed in that era, is Don Newcomb. Because really, Jackie Robinson, Don Newcomb, Campanella, then Junior Gilliam, and of course, the guy who was always ultimately the most underestimated was Hank Aaron. So scrawny and skinny, you know, just 30 home runs here, 30 here, 35. And looked up one day and this guy got 600, and look, something might happen. Yeah, something did happen.
Hey, tell me about your father. What position did he play?
He played center field for the Greenville Black Spinners. But at that time, you know, you had spinners. We were from a textile city, so you had the black spinners and the white spinners. You had the Birmingham Black Barons and the white barons, the Atlanta Crackers and the Black Crackers. Yeah, you had the kind of white black side, and those guys, many of them had come from World War II, and they had been in the military together. They were ready to play each other. I think that one of the great stories that's not told as much as Branch Rickett.
Hey, Jason.
As much credit as Branch Rickett deserves, many white ball players urge them to open up the black ball players. I mean, some guys who did some down and dirty, you know, they got a lot of publicity for being negative. But a lot of white players were taking the tours, urged the league to open up, and that was a good thing.
Well, let me wrap it up, y'all. What a pleasure to talk to you about baseball. You're a real baseball man, and, you know, this is what makes the game special, the passion, and you've got it. Now I know why.
All of my life, I have been around some baseball field, and this is really the field of my dreams. I mean, I do what I do now, professional, but baseball.
Well, I want to thank you for being on Memories of the Game, and, you know, your depth of passion for baseball, and it translates into life. I think there's a connection.
Well, I think the most significant thing is that much of the political transformation is established by the athletic arena. I would argue that the guy who made the second most contribution to racial change in Alabama to Dr. King was Bear Bryant, because he was this bigger than life athletic hero and coach. And they played USC, and Sam the Bam Cunningham humiliated them. And then they went again, and Johnny Rogers did it. And not the governor, not the legislature, not some judge, but Bear Bryant said, this will not work. We have to have black ball players. And when Bear Bryant said it, it was not another politician saying it. It worked, you know. And then biblically, you know, the David and Goliath and Samson. These are phenomenal. Man, look at here, George Wills. Hey, George.
How you doing?
Invariably, you know, Jack Robinson breaks in the 1947, 1954 Supreme Court decision. On any given afternoon now in the football season, basketball, baseball, the black and white interaction on the court, black, brown, white interaction on the court. You play the Canadian and the American Star Spangled Banner. Now you go to Puerto Rico and you play this Star Spangled Banner, I mean, the national anthem. Athletics has always had a way of opening up the culture, except the thing that's often missed is what makes this possible. Is that at the end is not race that matters. Is one's capacity to function on an even playing field between the lines. If you even the plan, even field, public rules and clear goals. If that happened in access to education, healthcare, medicine, banking, housing, wherever these rules exist, we all get better. So I think baseball has made a contribution to making America better, not just a pastime, but as a full-time. It has helped to make America better and the world better. It's now really the World Series. The World Series now.
Well, as again I say, it's a tremendous pleasure to talk to you about baseball. Reverend Jackson, thanks so much.
All right, buddy. Yes.